It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running. It is a brand new broadcast week on the horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And, of course, that's where we gather also every evening when the program is live. Evening, afternoon, morning, depending on where the planet you are when you're listening live. But we gather at HeadOn.live in the chat room. And it's easy to get into, and if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room in the hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and all time zones in between and the great globe around, well, just run on over. If you've never picked out a screen name and a password before, go ahead and do so. It's free. It's easy. And you will be immediately greeted by 68 AMC 343, Anatole Dowhead, our buddy Roger in Oregon, Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, insofar as he is a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. Yes, indeed. Hi, I'm Bob. It is Moran Monday on the horn. Sparky is accompanied and assisted and capably assisted, permit myself to introduce myself, by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. In fact, I had a note from Steve, and Steve said, Bob, our beloved Twiggy, our beloved dog companion and loyal friend, passed away this morning. We were fortunate in that she hung on long enough for Karen and I to express to her in words, pets, and hugs how we felt about her and how much she meant to us. Even if she didn't understand, we did. We can learn a lot from our relationship with our furry friends. If anyone has impacted your life in a positive way, make sure and try to express to them what they mean to you. And in honor of little Miss Twiggy, I'd like to make a $25 memorable challenge in her memory. Love to you and Ms. Agnes and Ferg and all the Horn Family Community Congregation. And that's from Steve and Miss Karen, little Cletus, formerly little Twiggy. Where are those pictures I was supposed to see? Hey, somebody get Don on the phone. I want to know what happened to the pictures. Never mind. My pathetic attempt at lifting the spirits of Steve and Karen. It's a long-distance dedication. No. I know what that feels like, and my heart goes out to them. Because, well, our four-legged family is family just the same. And it hurts. It hurts desperately badly. And so thank you for that. Thank you for that challenge, Steve and Karen and little Cletus. We will remember little Miss Twiggy fondly. And Steve adds, you know, afterthought, it's not all sadness. The Horn family also has a member who has a birthday today. You've heard from Faith in Colorado, and she talks about her husband, Andrew, all the time. She adores him. And so a shout out and a heartfelt happy birthday to Horn Family Community Congregation member, Brother Andrew, husband to Sister Faith from Colorado. Happy birthday, Andrew, and many, many happy returns. Indeed, indeed. And so every program here at the Horn does begin with gratitude. Thanks this evening to Steve and Karen and little Cletus. It's going to take a lot for me to stop saying little Twiggy. But she's there in spirit. Thank you so much. And thanks over the course of the weekend to the PayPal subscribers going back to the 21st. So that means thanks to Gary, and thanks to Gaia, and thank you to Harold, president and CEO of Sochtris, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thanks kindly to Tirani and to Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of Southern California. Thank you to Bill in Florida. Thank you to Colin. Thank you. And thank you to Reggie and Stacy and our friend Philip in Maryland. Thank you all. Thank you, Jeremy, for jumping in on Steve and Ms. Karen and little Cletus's challenge. $20 to go on that. And so the fundraising goal for the weekend, or after the weekend, to begin the week, we finished the week a little bit short, but we are at 455 to go. And if the Twiggy's Memorial Challenge is met, that'll take us down to 405. So thank you very kindly for getting us started that way. Yeah, Ralph says, oh no, hugs to Steve and Karen and little Cletus. Twiggy will hopefully be playing on the Rainbow Bridge with Grandpa Mason, Tiny Kittens, Crook, my cat, and all the other animals over the bridge. Lots of hugs. And Steve in New York says, I just joined in. Did little Twiggy make her journey across the Rainbow Bridge? Sadly, yes. Sadly, yes. But so while we begin on a sad note, I must note that given the fact that this is Moran Monday, perhaps the sadness will give way from grief to rage, and maybe we can find some stupid maggots to laugh at a little bit. I sure hope we can. I do indeed. I'm sure going to try. from Trey in Kentucky, Stan. Breaking, Donald Trump has tested positive for being a loser. See, we're off and running already. And that's probably how it will continue. But before we dive into the... No. I think we have to do things the right way here. We've got protocols and got to follow them. And thank you to Ralphs for jumping in on a little Twiggy's challenge. So that means $10 to go on it. Thank you very kindly. Lee in New York says, animals in your home. Condolences to Steve and Karen for the loss of their beloved four-legged friend. Of course, not all animals in our home are welcome. I'm thinking right now of Sam the studio serpent. Yeah, please don't make me think of Sam the studio serpent. 4 years. Oh no, Lee. You don't want the hell you're going to catch if I read that, Lee. No, you just don't. Let's observe the proper sequence of events as we begin this Moran Monday.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. You will not believe your ears. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Here, behind me, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, reside all manner of Morans for your amazement, your disgust, and yes, occasionally, your fits and paroxysms of uproarious laughter. Oh, yes, we've got them all. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, libertardians, maggots, trumpanzees, Republicans all, and they're all here waiting for you, perhaps in ways that you might not even want them to be. Yes, yes, indeed, right here, just a few meager steps off the Carnival Midway, where only moments before you were engaged in a futile attempt to take a little precious baby iguana home with you by throwing a ping pong ball into a goldfish bowl. Well, yeah, give up that foolhardy occupation, that foolhardy attempt, and come on over, because after all, subscribers to Moran Monday and The Horn are putting themselves out just a little less than the price of a half a stick of gum for their $10 a month subscription. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. It's the biggest bargain in media. You won't find this just about anywhere else. No, you won't, and we love new subscribers, need new subscribers all the time. One of these days, we may have so many subscribers that I don't even have to talk about fundraising during the program. And wouldn't that be wonderful, friends and neighbors? Yes, indeed. So as you prepare to enter the Moran Monday tent, a reminder to keep a close eye on and a close hand on bracelets, watches, rings, necklaces, piercing jewelry, purses, children, small animals, even that iguana that you somehow won improbably throwing a ping pong ball at a goldfish bowl. And yes, European style messenger bags, because after all, the morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. Oh yes, oh yes. And so with that in mind, just an initial observation based on what I've been seeing and hearing for the last, couple of weeks as we have approached the beginning. Thanksgiving is the real beginning of the late autumn, early winter holiday season. You know, there's a significant reality out there that our country is going to, our republic, the Union, is going to be in something less than a wonderful state after this holiday season is over. Because, well, Merkins are not the sharpest soup ladles in the drawer these days. And so I heard a statistic or a fact earlier today that more people got on planes flying around the country yesterday or over the weekend than at any time since March of this misbegotten, benighted, tragic year. That means that they're flying around the country and taking their invisible friend, SARS-2 COVID-19, with them. And so over on MSNBC earlier today, I caught a few minutes of an interview with a doctor from Oklahoma, Stan, who has said that things are so bad in Oklahoma that, even people with COVID-19 can't get into the hospital. NBC News' Morgan Chesky reported, we're seeing cases of patients having to wait up to 24 hours just to get a bed. And we know that staffing, they're fatigued and worn down simply because the numbers keep going up in spite of the fact that the CDC has recommended not to travel. We know that people all across the nation are going ahead and packing the airports, attending the mass gatherings. Because stupid. I don't know what it is that makes you... Are there Americans out there who think that the COVID-19 virus dies in proximity to an overcooked, dried-out turkey? Do they think that turkey vapors kill COVID-19? Well, the fact of the matter is, whatever it is, they're wrong. And so, Dr. David Chanson, who is with Integris Health, said, we saw a spike after a big ice storm we had a few weeks ago. I think it's a harbinger of what we see when people gather during the Thanksgiving and Christmas season. And I think it's going to be very difficult. I think unless we have a really smart Thanksgiving, we're going to have a very sad Christmas. Succinct and well put. And so here's where the Morin nomination comes in. Yes, one, for every individual who is traveling over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house, because as it turns out, this may be grandmother's last Thanksgiving because the youngins are going to bring their invisible friend COVID-19 to visit, and, well, then granny will get to cancel Christmas. So there's that. But also, and this is just the way my mind works, and maybe that's a problem, but I can't help remembering Thanksgiving's past. No, this isn't anything. This isn't Marley's ghost or anything. Scrooge is nowhere to be found. I mean, Scrooge is in the White House, but Scrooge, not so much. But in Thanksgiving's past, wait. Let me get this thing in order. What we've heard for the last couple of weeks is reporters and multimillionaires of the for-profit media talking about how, well, because this is 2020, and we all wish we could be home with family, and it's going to be a sad holiday season, but we have to do our part to stop the spread of the virus, and oh, it's going to be so sad. And they've beaten us over the head with how sad this holiday season is going to be. And no doubt there will be sadness that attends it. Not even being able to take a plate of dinner to a loved one in a long-term care facility, a nursing home, no. That's sad. It is indeed fraught with grief. And man, they have played it to the hilt, the multimillionaire for-profit media. It's as if they're trying to trigger some massive outpouring of tears, and somehow or another that's supposed to make it easier to stay home. And instead, I fear, because it's more in Monday, you know, I fear that the opposite is true. That in point of fact, by spending all these weeks talking about what a grim and lousy and crummy holiday season it's going to be because we all have to stay in our own homes and try not to spread the plague, that, well, it becomes an exercise like that don't think of an elephant thing. I just said don't think of an elephant, and everybody within the sound of my voice has just thought of an elephant. And the more they talk about how sad it's going to be that we're not around with family, the more that people, I think, U.S. Americans, tend instead to say,
Well, you know, maybe we should make that trip this year. It's been such a rough year, and maybe this will be our last chance. What? So I really think that the multimillionaire for-profit media has made this situation worse. And with that in mind, what I began to say a few minutes ago, that is, I remember the conversations we've had on this program and email and whatnot and the way we interact with each other in years past. And as often as not, during the holiday season, we have had some kind of a conversation at some point in time, almost every year of the 17 plus years this program's been on the air, where someone will call in and talk about how harrowing the holiday season is. Because on the one hand, it's hell. It's hell on people who are prone to being depressed because everybody's out there trying to make mellow during the grimmest time of the year. The light fails. The day ends early. Cloud cover. I mean, I know. I begin to just yearn for anything that smacks of warmth and light. But not just that. It's the fact that in so many of our families in this divided nation, we know that it's going to be a damn struggle to get through the holidays because, among other things, crazy old Uncle Fox News and crazy old Auntie Hannity Watcher and crazy cousin Onan fan are going to be sitting at the family holiday table. Yeah, pass me the turkey, and I tell you what, I still don't think America's going to get over having a Kenyan Muslim you slurper for a president. That's right. That's absolutely right. And you know what's worse? Her email's Benghazi. I don't understand these liberals. Can't understand why it is that America's dying. What with all these, and you know, we thought it was bad with her emails and Benghazi and a Kenyan Muslim you slurper president, but now we got the BLM and we got the Antifa. In years past, there was more angst, I think, that came from the idea of having to burnt one's tongue at the dinner table and not because, you know, we don't start this crap. I'll take some light and dark meat and you know, Trump sucks. No, we don't do that. We're trying to get along. We're trying to get through. But crazy old Uncle Fox News and crazy old Auntie Limbaugh listener, they start that shit because they just like to watch. They like to watch the chaos ensue. So where's all that? Do the multimillionaire members of the for-profit media not have crazy old Uncle Fox News and crazy old Auntie Limbaugh listener? Do they just live in a much happier, undivided family? I don't know. But I know damn good and well that it is the case that a lot of us, well, COVID-19 actually provides an excuse for a change. Oh, no, crazy old Uncle Fox News. We'd love to be there with you and Auntie Limbaugh listener, but, well, we can't, because, see, there's a virus going. Oh, you must be one. It's a hoax. Well, we're not going to talk about that, Uncle, but we can't come because, well, you think we got it, don't you? No. We're afraid we might bring it to you, and we don't want. You can't get it if once you've had it. I heard Trump say that. And you know what? It's just like the flu anyway. The part of it that ain't a hoax. Well, that's fine. That's fine, Auntie Limbaugh listener, but I'm afraid we won't be there. Then you mute the phone to her and go, I told him we wouldn't be there because of the virus, not because we don't want to sit around and listen to cranky people holler racist, bigoted, white nationalist horse shit at a holiday dinner table. So we'll thank you, y'all. Y'all thank us. Maybe we can hook up on Zoom. What's Zoom? I don't know, Uncle Fox News. Look it up on Parler. I'm sure somebody will explain it to you. Well, I was going to get that Parler, but then it turned out they wanted to give me all kinds of rules and regulations about what my password had to be, and I ain't going to have that kind of rules. And so I can't help wondering if the multimillionaire for-profit media have made a bad situation worse, have spurred people into going to Thanksgiving dinners. And I couldn't do it. Could you? I couldn't sit down at a humongous family gathering, even if I had one to go to. I couldn't do that. I'd be scared to freaking death. Every cough, every sneeze, every snort, incoming! And, you know, back under the table. So, you know, that's just a preliminary Moran Monday nomination for a for-profit media that is so obsessed with its ability to manipulate the feelings of the audience that... Well, they'll do this kind of melodrama. So, if I'm wrong, let me know. Are you sitting around just pining away? Because you're not going to listen to crazy old Uncle Fox News after he's had, you know, plate of turkey and dressing and all the trimmings and, you know, 9 or 10. Butt lights, and let me just tell you about how great Donald Trump is. Really? Yeah. I don't know. By the way, Lou in PA was kind enough to remind me to mention it again. The special runoff elections for Senate in Georgia are January 5th. You can get your absentee ballots now if you live in Georgia. Or you can wait to early vote, or you can go in person on the 5th day of January and roll the dice and hope you live to see the outcome. So, January 5th. Yeah? Okay. Thanks, Lou. A proposal, says Steve in New York. Just as you give cowbells to particularly clever or poignant anecdotes, how about we give now give guffaws from the gospel sharp grifter and chief Kenny Boy Copeland to things we want to laugh at, whether it's funny or just a large dose of schadenfreude. Get out of my brain, Steve. I've already got it queued up if such a moment should actually transpire during this Moran Monday, and I'd say there's a better than even chance that it will. Steve adds, and to make matters real bad, we got us a heathen papist as our next president, illegitimate as he is. Yeah, see, that's going to be there, too. I can't believe they're saying Joe Biden's president. Gosh, just imagine the joy of, you know, getting together around the holiday table with all your maggot relatives and hearing them talk about how Joe Biden's not really president, and now it was stolt from Donald Trump, and greatest president we've ever had anywhere on, greatest president in the history of the world on earth, in the universe, forever under God, amen, in this country. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's that, Lee in New York? Stop it, Bob. COVID-19 patients can't get into the hospital. The maggots know that COVID-19 doesn't exist. It's a plot from the basement of a pizza parlor. While drinking baby blood and watching child pornography, the hospitals are just overcharging by stating that the patients have COVID, even the patients they turn away. It couldn't be anything else. And besides, the doctors get paid extra when they say somebody died of COVID.
Teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings. Maggot teacher says every time the cash register rings, a doctor gets paid extra for a case of COVID.
Yeah, I know. Some government official is going to have to get really creative, says Randy Radar, to explain why it is 55 degrees on Christmas Day. And it's a possibility. I had a fun day yesterday. It was overcast, but it didn't rain until late at night. And I made something like north of 36 biscuits, homemade, from scratch, baked them on the acorn, because it takes a lot of biscuits to make a lot of dressing. And so I've got my French bread, and we're letting it get nice and croutonish, and got my biscuits, going to bake my cornbread. And see, we're not able to have Thanksgiving dinner together, but I know I can do this much. I can take an unbaked aluminum foil pan of dressing and an unbaked aluminum foil pan of sweet potato croquettes, beloved in our family, and I can warn our daughter in advance, and I can drive over, and with my mask and my gloves on, I can place it on their front porch and sort of like, Easter has the Easter bunny. Christmas has Santa Claus. The Thanksgiving gobbler god. I can just disappear and then call them and tell them to check the front porch, and it'll be a safe way to share the meal without sharing the Rona, right? Yeah. I mean, that's the idea. But, oh, when those biscuits came out, I love baking over a wood fire. Those biscuits were wonderful, had a nice little crispy bottom. Stop it. And just split them open, just fluffy as down. Hit it with the butter, and then I got out Roger's jalapeno jelly. Holy mackerel! No, there was no mackerel involved. No mackerels were harmed in the making of the biscuits. But oh, what a flavor party! I did it again this morning. I just heated up the biscuits in the microwave and butter and Roger's jalapeno jelly. Huh. What a delight. What a delight. Let's see here. Albert says, I once heard you explain what the various Morians believe. Could you please explain what a modern Rosicrucian believes? Not yet. That's going to take some cogitating. Kyle in Kentucky stands as... late to the show, but Moran Monday nomination. Family somehow thinks fining people for not wearing masks is the same as going after Jews in Nazi Germany. And apparently, the elites hatched a plan to steal ballots and took them all to big cities to steal the election for Biden so they could take everybody's guns. This is a real thing, Kyle advises. And honestly, the anti-reality rants now almost serve as a somewhat of a daily comedic break from the world for how hilariously stupid that they've become. Kyle, have you asked any of them that if we were going to conspire to why we would conspire to steal a presidential election, but we wouldn't bother with the Senate and we'd lose votes in the House? Have they sorted that one out? Oh, that's just to make it more believable when they steal it for Biden. See, I know, sweet Jesus, I know. And we have not heard from our good friend Paul from Parts Unknown in quite some time. And I have a note from Paul from Parts Unknown. The subject line says, "Return to Sender Challenge." Paul writes, "I just finished my seventh week in a row of working 50 hours on a six-day-a-week schedule. I've been trying to spend as much time with my family as I can, which makes finding the time to write these emails difficult. I've been working on this one for over a week. It doesn't take that long to write, proofread, and edit. It's just hard to find the time. I know I've been writing in with COVID-19 updates, but I'd like the majority of this email to be about something else. However, I'd like to talk about the pandemic for just a moment. You all know how bad it's getting out there. We reached over 12 million cases in the U.S. over the weekend, and we got from 11 to 12 million in just 7 days. This is that lily pads on the pond analogy. In fact, 1.5 million cases have been found in the U.S. over the same time it has taken me to write this. The lily pad analogy, where each day the lily pads double in a pond and they go from covering 10% of the pond to covering the whole pond in 3.5 days, is quite apt at this point. We are approaching the point where COVID-19 is just about 2 months away from covering the pond. Over the summer, since Memorial Day weekend, this virus has spread its little tendrils all over the United States. It's like America's been soaking itself in gasoline, and the favorable conditions for transmission we get during the fall and winter is the match. And now we're starting to burn down. It's already this bad, and we're just getting started. We still have around a month before the first official day of winter, where COVID transmission will be the worst. Barring a widely distributed vaccine, a massive lockdown, or sane and simple public health policies from the lame duck Trump administration, cases will most likely peak around Valentine's Day. I know you might say, hey, wait, the Biden administration gets in on January 20th. Remember, the three-week rule takes roughly 3 weeks for policy to affect the virus, and even if he starts right after the inauguration on January 21st, 3 weeks is February 11th. 3 days away from Valentine's Day. So let me stress that everyone is in danger. Everyone is in danger. I'm looking at models that show a massive ICU bed shortage on a national scale with 3,000 U.S. deaths a day by the beginning of January when the Georgia special elections are being held. More on that later. And maybe as much as 5,000 U.S. deaths per day at the peak of winter weather in February or March, depending on where you live. This plague is coming to your doorstep, Horn family. There are no safe areas of the country. Rural areas with low population densities are seeing massive infection rates per capita. The major way to think about this is that over the summer, at the worst point, maybe 1 out of 50 people you encountered in your everyday life are asymptomatic COVID-19 carriers. Now, it might be 1 out of 20. And at the height of winter, it might be 1 in 10. Maybe 1 in 5. So just assume everyone you meet outside your home could have it and act accordingly. Keep up the social distancing. Give anyone not wearing a mask or wearing it improperly a wide berth, and do not be inside with anyone who's not taking proper precautions. I'll add to that, try not to be inside anywhere that isn't your home for more than a few minutes. Grocery store, in, out, done. Gasoline, in, out, done. Try to reduce your exposure by reducing your time inside spaces that probably aren't being adequately protected against, if adequately protected against is even a thing that exists anymore. Now, Paul says, I don't want to simply be the Horn's COVID correspondent through the crisis. I'd like to comment on other things. For example, one of my closest friends almost lost his house due to unemployment. He had to start a GoFundMe page to raise money so that he wouldn't lose his home. I gave him $150, but luckily he was able to work things out with the bank and refinance the loan at a lower rate, and more good news, he got a new job. So my friend canceled the page and refunded all the money. So I got $150 burning a hole in my pocket and extra money working from all that overtime for weeks on end. And I'm putting up the Return to Sender Challenge. In honor of getting my money returned to its sender, I'm donating it back to the Horn. I'll match each dollar donated to the Horn up to $150. But wait, there's more. I'll also match donations to the Horn with donations to the Georgia special election Senate races. Ooh. That's right. If the Horn Family Community Congregation kicks in $150 to the Horn, I'll give $150 to the Horn and another $150 to the Senate races for a total of $300. That's the Return to Sender Challenge. Open. Hopefully, just until it's filled. I'd like to share a little bit more about myself with the Horn family. There are very few things in life I'm truly exceptional at, and one of them is strategy and tactics. I play a variety of board games that I usually win, and it's not unusual for me to win a game I've never played. Ooh, Paul from Parts Unknown. I want to get you, me, and about three other people together, and I want to play Risk with you, buddy. I haven't played a long and vicious game of Risk in a long time. Oddly enough, I'm bad at chess, Paul adds. Whenever I tell someone I'm a good strategist, they offer to play a game of chess with me, and then I lose terribly, making it near impossible to convince them how good I am. I'd like to share my thoughts from a tactical point of view about the election and where we currently sit. Please understand that this is all from a tactical point of view. There's no emotion or morality attached to it. The best thing to do tactically is not always the moral thing to do. Just ask Mitch McConnell. Ain't that the truth? So, I'd like to give you a window into my thinking. I'm behind about a week on the shows, so you may have already covered some of these topics. First, when I see something in the news or listen to commentators, I always find myself asking different questions than they do. One of the reasons I like your show so much, Bob, is that you tend to touch on most of the questions I have on issues that no one else is asking, or may address in 3 to 6 months, what you call being ahead of the curve. So here are the questions and points of view no one seems to be asking about the election. First of all, the infighting among Democrats must stop. More voters voted for your party than at any point in U.S. history. Both moderates and progressives did everything right in getting their supporters out, which is why we were able to flip Georgia and Arizona. The right question is to ask why more people came out for Donald Trump than ever. Many new voters registered to the Republican Party and went out in the middle of a pandemic and voted. Why? I've heard that Biden lost some Latino and African American support, but it doesn't cover 20 million more votes than Donald Trump got. That Donald Trump got. Where did they come from? Where did the extra Biden voters come from? How do we get them to come out again, and how do we convert some of those new voters to Trump to our side or make them want to stay home? Also, every election we see a bunch of red states that vote Republican but pass a progressive ballot measure like increasing the minimum wage or giving back ex-cons the right to vote. Why does neither party fully embrace these popular ballot measures and then ride their coattails to win? There are a lot of allegations of voter fraud from the Republican Party, but no one's looking into possible voter issues in North Carolina or Texas. I'm not saying there are problems there, but if there were, a good tactic would be to put the other side on the defensive by accusing them of doing what you're guilty of. We've seen this pattern from Republicans in the past. For example, accuse Joe Biden of inappropriate actions with women to distract from the 20-plus credible allegations of sexual misconduct against Trump. Now, we need to move to the important point. I'm extremely focused, Paul continues, on climate change. Tactically, that is the ball game. We're in a bus driving straight into a wall at high speed. Tactically, it doesn't matter if a man or woman is driving the bus, how economically equal all the passengers are, or whether trans Americans can use the bathroom of their choice in the back of the bus. The bus is going to crash. These things are not a priority. We need to stop the bus or turn the wheel and drive away from the wall. Survival of the species is all that matters. Now, I believe we're all screwed when it comes to climate change. Other scientists and I believe we are now entering into massive feedback loops, and we cannot get out of this by stopping pollution, using clean energy, or passing a Green New Deal. To survive, we're going to have to build massive terraforming stations that will remove CO2 from the atmosphere that are powered by wind, solar, or hydroelectric. If you power them with fossil fuels, you'll create more CO2 than you remove due to the fact that you will always bleed energy in any system. We will need thousands of these stations all over the world. The good news is that we have the technology. It's just a matter of funding and policy. To get the funding and policy, you need a functioning executive branch and State Department. Don't forget, the State Department has been massively understaffed under the Trump administration. I'll add editorially, it's been kneecapped. We need the executive branch working with a functional EPA, Justice, and State Departments. I know that Joe Biden was not many people's first choice in the primary. They may feel bitter and have low expectations for President-elect Biden, but it never really mattered tactically which candidate won. Whomever won, they spend a large part of their first term rebuilding the damage that Trump and his enablers have done to the executive branch. And onto that, we are in a pandemic that's going to leave the country incredibly in bad shape on public health and the economic fronts. So all this boils down to whomever won the primary will spend the next 4 to 12 years cleaning up this mess. Now, the real question is who will control the people that are going to be put in these important positions of power that need Senate confirmation? Joe Biden or Mitch McConnell? It'll be Mitch McConnell's attorney general, his secretary of treasury, etc. Mitch McConnell is also an exceedingly good tactician. If I were him, I can't have the Justice Department digging further into the Trump administration. While it might be good to bury Trump after he leaves, it could lead to charges against Devin Nunes, Lindsey Graham, or even Matt Gaetz. Winning the special elections in Georgia are crucial for getting in a functioning cabinet. They're also needed for confirming Merrick Garland should another seat on the Supreme Court come open in the next 2 years. You also have a lot better chance of keeping the Senate in 2022 if you have 50 senators rather than 48. A midterm election tends to favor the party that's not in power. In a good midterm, the Democrats might get net two more Senate seats, probably one. So these special elections will likely govern who controls the Senate for the next 4 years, not two. So I couldn't think of a better thing to do with my money I had given that I didn't expect to give it back to the Horn and these campaigns. Hence the Return to Center challenge. My money got returned to me, and I'm giving it away again, and then some. I'll match every dollar donated to the Horn, and each dollar you donated is matched to the campaigns of John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock of $75 to each campaign if the challenge is fully funded. Stay safe out there, Horn family. The worst of COVID is yet to come. We had a 20% increase in cases in the last 2 weeks. We've been fighting this since mid-March to now, about 35 weeks, and 20% of total cases have been logged roughly 6% of the time we've been dealing with this. If you were fighting a war for over 6 months and 20% of your casualties happened in the last 2 weeks, most people would say that you're losing the war, or at the very least, it is currently not moving in your favor. Unless drastic policy changes happen and the people follow them, we could be looking at 2 million cases a week, 2 million cases a week by Christmas. Use all the precautions I've written in about before. Stay at least 15 feet away from masked individuals and maximize your distance with people not wearing a mask, probably 30 to 50 feet if you're outdoors. And don't be indoors with people that are not wearing a mask, except the people you live with in your home. Lastly, Bob says it's weird this week, and every week it gets weirder. I'd like to paraphrase that a little bit and say, it's very dangerous out there this week, and it gets more dangerous every week. Wishing all the Horn family good health and good fortune through these dangerous times. Signed, Paul, from Parts Unknown.
But there's a P.S. P.S. And this is what people are really waiting to hear. P.S. I've bought 15 pounds of almonds from Costco. I get the next 5 days off starting Wednesday of this week. I will be using the time to relax, unwind, and peel some almonds. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Ooh, palmonds. Yes, yes. Thank you, Paul. I dare say, over the course of this pandemic, Paul from Parts Unknown has provided us with more and better information than a hell of a lot of what goes out over the for-profit multimillionaire media. I have no problem saying that at all. Paul provides so much crucial information, food for thought, and he does so out of an abiding sense of warmth and respect for this little radio community. Thank you, Paul. Thank you. I cannot thank you enough. And he's absolutely right about climate change. Probably more right than most Americans can even stand to ponder. And so there it is. The return to sender challenge is on the table. And this is one of the, this is just a really, really, really neat challenge. We match $150 and in turn, $150 goes to the campaigns of John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock. How cool is that? So hopefully, we will knock that down in fairly short order. Ms. Twiggy's challenge has been completed. Thank you very kindly. To Sheila. Hey, Jerry. And so there it is. It's on the clock. $150 to go. And if we knock that down, then John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock get $75 a piece. Okie doke. There we go. And hopefully we'll knock it out in the next, couple of hours because we are at the pretty much the end of the filibobster for this Morin Monday. Darlene with a note says, I'm liking Joe Biden's John Kerry pick. Something good there, along with the growing diversity of his cabinet. A woman as Director of National Intelligence? Wow. And Linda Thomas Greenfield as UN Ambassador? Double wow. Janet Yellen's back in the picture, too, at Treasury. And I'm glad Biden rebuffed concerns about the Republicans determining his cabinet choices. He's having none of that. Does he know something regarding the two runoffs in Georgia that we don't? Let's hope so. He's been around a long time, and next to Hillary, Joe is for sure the most prepared to take the Oval in January. Biden and Harris are hitting all the best notes, or maybe it seems like that that way as relief sets in that we're not looking down the barrel of Trump for the next 4 years. In other words, I'll take it. Although I had a morning mare, see that? Morning mare, not a nightmare, a morning mare. Although I had a morning mare a few months ago that Trump had succeeded in overturning the election results, and I was totally freaked out that I felt it physically in my gut during the dream, it was so real and everyone else in my dream seemed rather matter-of-fact about it, even though they despised Trump.
I'm so glad it was just a bad dream for now. My family hates Trump, although my brother admitted he's going to miss Trump for the humor value. I realized he's unaware of just how much damage Trump has done because he's just trying to survive day to day. I kindly pointed out that to him. I know he passed the national one-question IQ test on November 3rd because his wife is a resident alien from Greece and saw the disaster coming over 4 years ago with Trump. She had a lot of influence, thank goodness, among her husband, my beloved brother, and their four children, who are rather rednecky, unlike me. I'm the black sheep in the family. Sorry if that's racist in any way, not intended, as I'm proud of my place in the family as such. So I'm actually relishing being alone for Thanksgiving Day, my favorite holiday. I've become a hermit in the age of COVID-19, and I'm actually okay with it. I'm also sleeping in late and not beating up on myself because I'm sure a weird little depression underlies all of it. I cannot wait until January 20th, 2021. I cannot wait. I get that. It's an eagerness. It's sort of like something our buddy Texas T pointed out. We are now 1 month away from the lengthening of days. And even though the beginning of the lengthening of days signals the beginning of the hardest of winter, those days do lengthen. And it's something to look forward to. And the days, by the time January 20th, 2021 reaches us, the days will be lengthening. Each day will get longer. Up until the vernal equinox. And then there will be more day than night. But first, we have to get there. And to get there, we've got to do what we can to make sure that we're there when the time comes. And if it gets to the point where, as Paul says, is possible that 1 in 5 people you run into at random have the Rona, it is going to be, well, it's going to be a slog. So based on the way Paul described things, I'm going to modify my behavior a little bit to the extent humanly possible. All my trips out, I will try to get everything we need and hopefully get to stay home more than I go anywhere. I still have to be the risk taker here. And so go down to the settlements for provisions and get back up the mountain and don't plan on going back for a couple of weeks or more if humanly possible. It's going to be scary. There's no way around it. Of course, if you're in civilization and you can do grocery delivery and things like that, that's even better. Most I can do is get it delivered to the car here. Can't get it delivered to the house. I mean, yeah, some stuff, but like, milk and half and half, you know, perishables. You got to go out for that. On the other hand, the Rippy Mart where I encountered the maggot who coughed and displayed to me his tobacco crumb covered tongue. Well, they're on the ban list. Agnes has told me, and I do what I'm told where that's concerned. Agnes has told me that they are forever banned from receiving our custom. Banned from receiving any dollars spent. So I won't be going there anymore, even though it means driving a lot further to refill the kerosene tanks. And oh my God, got to change the wick in a kerosene heater. You ever done that? It ain't fun. But, ugh. Probably not. It's getting colder here, but it's probably not going to happen for a couple of days because I meant to tell you there's a program note. Last week, I was supposed to have my oral surgeon appointment. They called me in advance to say, don't come. Our x-ray machine done broke down. And the part is coming from the settlements, and it ain't here yet. So it was rescheduled to tomorrow. And I asked for a morning appointment, but the receptionist explained to me that he doesn't do morning appointments because his mornings are always consumed with his surgeries. So the appointment is scheduled for tomorrow at 2. There's not going to be anything much done except a radical cachectomy and some x-rays and probably some poking around. And I'll probably cry or at least yelp a couple of times. I should be back in time for air, but if I'm late, I'm late. But I don't imagine not being on air at all. I'll try to give some sort of an advance warning, and I'll give my apologies in advance. Because, you know, I realize that, and it means a lot to me. In fact, it kind of blows my mind. I'm not very good at being an egomaniac. And it blows my mind to know that the community waits for these three happy hours every night, and it thrills my soul. And I hate to be away. And I think, on balance, I'm probably on air here as much or more than anybody else doing this work. I think I probably miss fewer days than most people doing this work. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud of that. Thank you for an anonymous contribution jumping in on the return to sender challenge. And thank you very kindly to Brendan on the return to sender challenge, and thank you Barbara on the return to sender challenge. That means that we are $85 into the 150 that Paul wants to see in order to double it here, and then also kick it in to the Ossoff and Warnock campaigns. So what, 50, 65 bucks, and Paul from Parts Unknown's return to sender challenge is met. And that is awesome. Thank you. Back to the mailbag for a minute. Mighty Mouse says, Bob, stop saying the days will get longer. They are 23 to 26 hours every day. I also have a problem with the misusage of eager and anxious. I am both these days. Really? This time of year? Sorry, I had to kill a flying insect. Mighty Mouse followed up. My cleverness by half meant 23 to 25 hours. Given daylight saving time, of course, and also a fallacy of rules and skewed standards. I get it. There will be more hours of light. Does that help? Yeah, maybe. Oh, and P.S., Joe Biden, Darlene in Connecticut says, is double masked. He said it appeared today that he was, in fact, wearing an N95 under a black cloth mask, which is great. I'm assuming that black mask is 4-ply. That's good. He's setting a smart example. Especially in light of the fact of a study that Agnes brought to my attention over the weekend that a large number of the N95 masks that we're running around in, or the KN95 masks, fail after 2 days. Yeah.
I still, when I
wear the fiber masks, the cape, nicotine hiccups, the KN95s, I hose the little bastard down with spray alcohol when I come in from being anywhere that the Rona probably is wandering around. Yeah. So, again, please, please, please be careful. Oh, and I mentioned the nicotine hiccups. I do still have to rely on the pouches during the program. Not using nearly as many as I was, but during these 3 hours, yeah. But being as it's a Monday, and being as from time to time people still do inquire, Bob, are you still a non-smoker? I'm still a non-smoker. And this is day 70. 10 weeks without a cigarette. Let me see. How did the oxymoron used to put it? My friends, I sit here broadcasting for you today with a bottle of water held in my formerly nicotine-stained fingers to tell you that I am 10 weeks clean of cigarettes. Yeah. 10 weeks. And not to be too anticipatory or to tempt fate. Let's see, this thing's solid wood. Yeah, knock wood. I think my 100th day will be 2 days before Christmas. So that's kind of cool. Double masking, huh? Yeah. Going back to a couple of comments. David in South Carolina, Stan, says in regard to what Paul from Parts Unknown was writing, DT new voters. I do not believe that 200,000 new voters in Miami-Dade County all voted for Donald Trump. Same thing happened in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. Something is just off here. And it always is. And that's the thing. While our attention has been focused on places like Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin, on Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada, you got to wonder how many shenanigans and how much malarkey was gotten up to in places like South Carolina, Stan, and Texas, where things miraculously were not as they were expected to be. Would maggots cheat? Yes. Do maggots project? Oh, yes. And so it's worth remembering that everything the maggot administration complains about is usually something they have already done or plan to do. So just kind of keep that in mind. And dear God, the shenanigans and malarkey that was gotten up to in Michigan today. Whew! Yeah. Joy, our pal in Ann Arbor, wrote me earlier saying, I've been watching C-SPAN all afternoon. Piles and piles of shit still going on. The public commentary would gag a maggot. Between Parler and Fox News and Limbaugh and Onan, the liquidation of American brains has done a marvelous job. I'm just so fucking mad. They're going to do an extensive review and reworking of how we conduct elections in our state via the legislature because it's all just such a mess, and we'll never know who really won Michigan because it's all just such a mess, don't you know? And some seriously angry emojis following that. Joy pointing out, scattered screw-ups do not constitute fraud, goddammit. Intent, intent, intent. Precisely. But it's going to be, they're going to wreck it. And they'll try to make it more maggot or Republican friendly. I mean, at this point in time, in terms of the stupid legal challenges from the law firm of my cousin Vinny, they basically argued, just throw out everybody's vote who didn't vote for Donald Trump. That comes from the Saddam Hussein school of vote counting. But going back to what I was saying about our emotions being manipulated by the multimillionaire for-profit media, Randy Radar says, it's a recent phenomenon on the mainstream news to tell you how to feel. My astute brother pointed this out to me 10 years ago. After a mainstream disaster porn piece, like a stereotypical picture of a president looking out of an airplane window saying, yep, that's a disaster, all right. The other newscaster tells you, that's really terrible, Phil. Then I noticed on the local evening news that while one reporter was telling the story, the other newscasters were subtly nodding in agreement. Yes, yes. Now, in the former Soviet Union, the newscasters used to precede a piece of propaganda by uttering the phrase, Kak izvestnya. Translation, as everybody knows. The subtle nodding by the co-anchors on the local American evening news is doing the same thing, warning people, you wouldn't want to be an outlier, would you? Which is different by a considerable margin from saying, well, I know that ain't true because I know there's a conspiracy of blood-drinking child pornographers in the basement of a pizza joint in D.C. that ain't got no basement. I know that. See, they're just telling you there's no basement. You ever not seen the basement that ain't there? Yeah, see what? That's what I'm talking about. Learned all about it on the Onan and the parlor. Well, I did till I forgot my password. Yeah, yeah. Paul from Parts Unknown's comment on the Latino vote. On electoralvote.com, they discuss that there's no monolithic Latino voter, says Lee in New York. Some from Cuba, some from Central America, some from Mexico. Some view themselves as America took over their home. There's no one answer. If you don't know them, you can't convince them. Truth there. Mike in Cascadia. A truly excellent video by a high school student about limiting exposure time, a critical COVID prevention strategy. Sometimes I get ahead of myself that doesn't get enough attention. Well, let's give it some attention, shall we? Maybe the audio will be helpful, even though we don't have video.
Hi, I'm Chen Jing. Many of us have been following the CDC recommendation that everyone try to wear masks, maintain distance from others, and wash hands. These things are effective, simple to remember, and are continuously mentioned. I noticed that there is one thing that should be done that is just as important as those strategies, yet it's not a CDC recommendation and is rarely highlighted by other sources, and that is minimizing the time of exposure. Let me explain. SARS-CoV-2 can spread through the air. When someone with the virus coughs, sneezes, talks, or just even breathes, they expel droplets that contain varying amounts of the virus. Some of the droplets are heavy and fall to the ground from gravity, and others are small and light, which are called aerosols, and are able to float through the air. The aerosols float around and have no place to go in closed spaces, putting everyone in that space at risk. There's actually a certain amount of viral particles that must get into your body for you to get sick. This amount is called an infectious dose. In a case study described in the journal Emerging Infectious Diseases, there was an outbreak of COVID-19 on January 24, 2020 that started from a restaurant in China. An asymptomatic carrier sat here. They breathed continuously, which kept adding viral particles to the closed room. On one side of the wall, there was an air conditioner circulating the virus in this part of the restaurant. Three families spent up to at least 53 minutes in the restaurant while the carrier was present. These people ended up contracting COVID-19 because they inhaled an infectious dose. Note, this happened when some were even sitting much more than 6 feet away from the carrier. This is similar to being exposed to ionizing radiation over time, where there is a certain total amount that is dangerous to humans. People who are at risk try to minimize the amount of time they are exposed to radiation and use dosimeters that measure a total exposure amount. Some dosimeters sound an alarm when they reach a certain amount. In a way, your body acts as its own viral dosimeter, as when your body obtains the infectious dose, your body may sound the alarm by coming down with COVID-19. The longer you stay in a closed, unventilated space, the greater your risk of coming down with COVID-19, because of the increased amount of time of possibly being exposed to the virus. the people in the restaurant that sat more than 6 feet away still came down with COVID-19 because they filled the viral dosimeters by staying in a virus-filled area for the duration of a dinner. Healthcare workers and essential workers are more at risk because they spend more time being exposed to the virus and so are more likely to get the infectious dose of SARS-CoV-2. What we can learn from this is in addition to following the CDC recommendations, we should minimize the amount of exposure time to the virus. If you can't control the amount of time you're in a space, you can try to limit the amount of virus around you. You can do this by ventilation, such as opening a window in a closed space, and even more so by attaching a fan to the open window to blow air out. By doing this, it can lower the amount of virus in the area. Another way is to add a hospital-grade filter to the room. This can remove the vast majority of particles from the air, therefore lowering the risk of reaching the infectious dose and getting COVID-19. If you spend less time in closed spaces, get fresh air into the room, or clean the air with a filter, you're minimizing filling your viral dosimeter and decreasing the chance of getting sick.
Mike in Cascadia was quite right. That is helpful. Very helpful. So, meanwhile, tens of thousands, if not millions, of Americans are going to sit in enclosed spaces with crazy old Uncle Fox News and crazy old Auntie Limbaugh listener, and they're just going to sit there and spew and spew and spew. And a word about immunity. I got some news today from a friend who is now quarantining for 14 days, because this friend informed me that they were informed that a person who was in their home a week ago has been diagnosed, and that person's spouse has also been diagnosed. Here's the word about immunity. The person's spouse who has been diagnosed, that person has already had it. That person had it in May. Let me see. Ciphering. Fingers. May to June. June to July. July to August. August, September. September, October. October, November. At most, 6 months ago, but actually became COVID negative less than 6 months ago, and now has it all over again. I doubt if anybody in the Horn Family Community Congregation will be surprised to hear me say that, because we, unlike maggots, are not science-averse. We are not authoritarians, and therefore when somebody says,
"Well, they've told me I'm immune,"
we know that those are the ravings of a not particularly mentally well individual who didn't have that much to work with in the first place. So, we're learning more and more. There was more news out from another developer of a virus. This was the Oxford University vaccine. And they say that they're 90% effective and that their vaccine doesn't have to be required at crazy low temperatures. This one's a little weird, though, because they compared different administrations of the methods of the vaccine. Two doses, one dose, and lo and behold, the 90-plus percent rate came when they administered a half a dose first and then a full dose later. But the problem is, at this point in time, it's vaccine schmaxine. There's not going to be a vaccine in time to save the fire that is going to start in this country because people couldn't resist and just couldn't stand to go without sitting at a Thanksgiving dinner table listening to the ravings of crazy old Uncle Fox News and Auntie Limbaugh listener. Jesus, Jesus. It's frightful. Thank you to Charlene. Charlene just took us down to $40 to go on the Return to Sender Challenge, courtesy of Paul from Parts Unknown. And Scott in Wisconsin, thank you. Scott just finished it off, which means that we have $155 to go to finish the evening. No, no. That means we have $115 to go to finish the evening. And now that just means we've got $55 to go to finish the evening. Thank you, Scott in Wisconsin. Thank you so very, very much indeed. So Paul from Parts Unknown Return to Sender Challenge has been answered in lickety-split time. Thank you so much. That means that Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff will each receive $75 to help them take back the Senate. And we've wiped out last week and all but $55 of tonight, which is tremendous. Steve, on the other hand, in New York, says, I'm going to disagree with Paul from Parts Unknown, but not in a good way. Since 11/5/2020, our average rate of increase has been 3.71% per day. So that would be 18 days ago. I chose those data points because that's the duration of time over which our current case count doubled. On November 5th, 2020, there were 628,462 cases. On 23rd November 2020, 1,209,848 cases. That's 18 days that it took to double. The daily rate is a 3.71% increase. Apply that from November 23rd to Christmas, and I project a 7-day rolling total at 3,881,424. And this is the not in a good way part. In short, on December 25th, it looks to me like we will have added 3.8 million cases from the period. Oh, you thought it was going to be from November 23rd, didn't you? No. On December 25th, I see that we will have added 3.8 million cases from December 19th to December 25th. And that, in a word, is chilling. Chilling indeed. Yeah, haha, okay. Silent R. Lamar. Hey, Bob, how can you say you're a non-smoker when I can see the smoke coming out of your ears? All right, you get a little jingle for that, Silent R. Subject line, Biden and the Flying Unicorn Brigade. That would be the Sparkle Fart Propelled Unicorn Cavalry Purity Patrol. Yep, says David in South Carolina, Stan. The Purple Flying Unicorn Brigade says that Biden needs to nominate more people that they approve of. They do not approve of his nominees. Oh, I'm sure that we're all just swimming in a lack of ideological purity. Because, as David says, as someone who has spent much of his life in the Democratic Party politics, I can tell you that the Democratic Party could not successfully carry out a huge conspiracy to rig elections. Democrats cannot and will not march in lockstep. Just won't happen. Which reminds me of something that Van Jones, back before he went on CNN to start saying things like, my, wasn't Donald Trump presidential tonight? Van Jones said, the irony of Democrats and Republicans is that Republicans talk about individuality, but they act collectively, whereas Democrats talk about collective action and act individually. Well, I'll take that as a compliment. Lee in New York said a little while ago, Bob, I don't know of anyone else who can segue from global warming to food porn. You just gotta, you know, you gotta find some way just to keep from going bazonkers. Megan, by the way, talking about hanging out with family during the holidays. I'm kind of glad I'm not going this year. Thanksgiving this year will be me and my mother. Why? Because in no less than two conversations my mother had with my father, he is convinced that Nancy Pelosi and Kamala Harris will use the 25th Amendment on Joe Biden to take over the country with the help of Ilhan Omar and make it into a carbon copy of Venezuela. Yeah. Carbon copy of Venezuela, huh? How about that? Oh, dear. Yes, of course. Jeremy earlier with a bit of a complaint. Bob, stop telling us what a wonderful cook you are. Yes, we'll get hungry and then get less hungry because it's only a matter of time until someone takes a shot at dinner. After all, we don't know if Karen and Mike Pence are still on vacation having super normal heterosexual sexy time as we speak. Oops! Spoke too soon. Well, it's nice when y'all go ahead and take care of it for me. Forks are clattering on plates all across the country now. At the mere idea of having the visual of, oh, I can't even say it out loud. Mother and Michael. Yes. Hey. Oh, back to, welcome to Biscuit Talk. Flavio says, only fresh handmade biscuits for me. I was in a hurry, and I got a cylinder of those frozen Pillsbury ones. Baked them in the oven and assayed them. Those were the most tasteless, insipid, and limp biscuits I've ever had, and I will never do that again. Limp biscuits. Yuck! Never again, I say. Yeah. Robert in Australia says, oh, yeah, get on a plane. So basically, the worst thing you can do at this time is to get on a plane with all its recycled air because recycled air saves money. I always used to get sick in winter when working in air-conditioned buildings. There was always someone who had come to work on their deathbed because the company would collapse without them. As the building engineer told me, the air conditioning recycles the air between floors. Someone on the sixth floor coughs, and everyone three floors above and three floors below gets sick. Avoid air conditioning as much as possible. Signed, Robert, in Oz, in isolation, still. P.S. I'm about to set out for my daily walk before it gets too hot. I'll wear a mask for the entire 60 minutes and, as always, arrive home without any issues. Yeah. It's like the Pepsi guy in the store the other day. No mask. Big old COVID particle-collecting beard, but no mask. Said he had asthma, had a condition, didn't have to wear the mask. I'll bet. Elbert in Rhode Island says, Duval County in Texas is in the part of Texas you described. It's famous for dead people voting in a presidential election. And we thought there were no such things as zombies. And breaking news, I've seen this a couple of times and was just rolling around to it at the halfway point of the program. Lou and Sparky both letting me know. The Government Services Administration tells Biden that transition can formally begin. Trump gives in, says Sparky. Transition has begun. Well, I guess it got a little hot for who's that maggot lady that was running the GSA? Suddenly, maybe she got the idea that after that she became that she was the first person who might get hauled away in irons by the sergeant at arms. Because that came up again. Megan says, I had a mouth full of ham sandwich when someone introduced the image of Mike and Karen Pence sexy time. That's Jeremy in Vermont. Don't blame me. I only read it. Ugh! Says Megan. Bill in PA says, immunity? I heard a caller on C-SPAN that said he was immune because he has O-positive blood. A few callers later said that he was full of it because the second caller knows someone who has O-positive blood that contracted COVID-19. Oh, what a joy. I appreciate all of you who take one for the team and check in on C-SPAN from time to time. I can't do it. I lack the moral. That's not the moral. The constitutional. Not like the document. I lack the constitutional fortitude for it. Kevin just pointed out the GSA tells Biden that transition can formally begin. Kevin said, looks like it's over, finally. I don't know how over it is, but at least the transition's going to start. And Randy says, I suggest you take a close look at Trump's signature. Trump's signature. Well, I mean, I've seen it in the past. It looks like a Klan meeting. All those little pointy little hats. What do you have in mind, Randy? Ah, yeah, Emily Murphy, the transition maggot transition gatekeeper. Yeah. Bless her heart, says Shorty in L.A., we just heard a partial explanation of COVID-19 being a shedding virus. It's that aerosol part that's, they don't all just fall to the ground and you can mop them away. They travel. Boy, do they travel. And I said there was a chance that we might get something to giggle about. You remember... Remember when Trump tweeted back on November 14th, I look forward to Mayor Giuliani spearheading the legal effort to defend our right to free and fair elections. Rudy Giuliani, Joseph DeGenova, Victoria Tenzing, Sidney Powell, and Jenna Ellis, a truly great team, added to our other wonderful lawyers and representatives. Not anymore. Because... Rudy Giuliani fired her by tweet today, Sidney Powell. Sidney Powell is practicing law on her own. She is not a member of the Trump legal team. She is also not a lawyer for the president. Who was that? Sidney, what? Sidney Australia? No, Sidney, never heard of her. She was the one at the... My Cousin Vinny press conference where the spray on hair was running down Giuliani's head. She's the one that spewed some of the biggest examples of crazy. And Emily Murphy, I think she caved. Because the House said that they were going to come after her. We cannot wait yet another week to obtain basic information about your refusal to make the ascertainment determination. Every additional day that is wasted is a day that the safety, health, and well-being of the American people is imperiled. As the incoming Biden-Harris administration is blocked from fully preparing for the coronavirus pandemic, our nation's dire economic crisis, and our national security. And that's when they dropped the Article 1 threat on her. We'll issue a subpoena to you, and if we have to, we'll make the sergeant-at-arms drag your ass in front of us, and then you really will answer questions from Katie Porter. And if you didn't want to do it without handcuffs on, wait till you just think about how much fun it's going to be to do it wearing bracelets. Also today, and this is part of what Joy in Ann Arbor was watching, as Flavio reminds me, a Michigan board has voted to certify the state's election results. And that, once again, has, at some point in time, there's going to be we were talking about this last week, there's going to be a Hitler finds out video. Hitler finds out Emily Murphy is caved. Hitler finds out Michigan certified the election. And God, what a bunch of goobs. Former Michigan Republican Senator Patrick Kolbeck tried to float the notion that he personally could refuse to certify the election, blathering on about computers that were connected to the internet and trying to subvert the election and hide the fact that they were doing so. And that's when a member of the board said, you got all this hot shit information. Have you turned any of that over to the Attorney General of the state of Michigan there? I mean, you know, have you, Patrick? Have you done that? You might want to do that.
Senator Kolbeck,
yes.
If you're alleging fraud in this election, have you taken it to the Attorney General, your evidence?
I've submitted my affidavits to lawyers, and we've moved it up the chain that way. And you'll notice that when you're...
Submitting your affidavit to lawyers is not moving it up the chain. That's not giving it to the Attorney General. Because I've submitted it to lawyers is another way of saying I've given my affidavit to Rudy Giuliani and Sydney, what's her name, and yeah. It didn't end well for Patrick Kolbeck.
A lot of people from the Democratic Party are refuting the Republican poll challengers, stating that they were refuted in court. We were never getting an opportunity to cross-examine the witnesses on the other end, like Chris Thomas. So,
submitted evidence of fraud to the Attorney General's office?
How? She just keeps asking that question. Stop.
I can submit it to anybody you'd like me to submit it to. I've submitted.
No. The wrong verb tense, Pat. Have you? Past. Not I can submit it sometime in the. No. Did you? You said about, you know, the counting machines were connected to the internet and the Iraq and America, the U.S. Americans.
If there is an accusation of fraud, this board is not equipped nor authorized to investigate fraud. It should appropriately be sent to the Attorney General's office.
Your job is to ensure the proper certification of this election and the proper execution of processes related to election integrity.
Not really. Mm-mm. I think it's just a matter of maggots don't think real good.
And I can demonstrate that the chain of custody was breached on multiple occasions in multiple links. That, from a Board of Canvasser perspective...
Then take it to the Attorney General, genius!
...it is your raison d'etre. You're supposed to ensure the accuracy of the election. And the only way you can do that is by maintenance of a chain of custody, and that has not happened in this election.
Is there any further questions for Mr. Kolbeck?
Yeah, when did your parents drop you on your head as a child? No.
Thank you, Mr. Kolbeck.
And she just turned his mic off. And as David in South Carolina, Stan, reminds us, this reliance on affidavits is funny. I can swear under oath that I believe that an alien stole my cat. That does not mean an alien stole my cat. At least. Yeah, maybe they didn't steal it. It's still mealtime somewhere. Affidavit. Lee in New York says he was going to submit it to the Attorney General, but Giuliani's hair dye dripped on it. Just, okay. Yeah, that's good. That's good, too. I told you there'd be some fun tonight. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you very, very kindly. We now have $5 to go to finish fundraising for this Monday and be caught all the way up, which is freaking awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Stephen. So it's falling apart all over the place. Fell apart in Pennsylvania. A maggot lawyer got eaten alive by a federal judge there. And then it's not going so not going so great in Wisconsin either, home of the $3 million two-county recount. No. There, a maggot actually argued that his own vote should be thrown out. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. And now, I noted this story because of the similarity to something I experienced last week. Well, hold on. Okay, that's a good point. Arnold in PA says, no fear of contempt of court or perjury from any of these assholes. They actually believe the checks are going to clear. Yeah, but on my filthy morning habit today, it was another one of those moments where you go, damn, said this how many weeks ago? But there was Joe this morning talking about how all these lawyers hooting and hollering about fraud will not say it out loud in court, because if you say it out loud in court, the next thing you know, your law license starts aching real bad. I say it here. It comes out there. Right. Hereby, wherefore, heretofore, says Stephen New York, I hereby and wherefore heretofore claim and declare I own the question mark. Well, that must make it yours, Steve. But like I said, I ran across a story, this out of Virginia. And it reminded me very much of my incident with a maggot last week. Loudoun County, Virginia. Fairly well-off county in Virginia. There was a protest, I guess. Yeah, there are some people protesting outside of Trump's skeevy golf course there. And a maggot by the name of Raymond Deskins appears to have put himself in the immediate personal space of these women who were protesting, and apparently also a Donald Trump or a blow-up doll standing in for Donald Trump. Don't know. Raymond Deskins, who was wearing his maggot clothing, approached the women. He's 61, Raymond Deskins is. The woman asks him to move away from her because, of course, the maggot isn't wearing a mask. And he refuses to. And another woman points out, you know, you're not wearing a mask. Oh, wait, Deskins was carrying the Trump blow-up doll. Don't ask. Don't ask. I'm trying to take it easy on dinner in the Central Standard Time Zone or late lunch or whatever. Early snack in California. He had the blow-up doll. And when they asked him to wear a mask, he got up close to him and then took a nice deep breath in and huffed on him. Yeah. Raymond Deskins is apparently from Sterling, Virginia. That's also where the Trump golf course that Deskins would never be able to play on is from. And the protest was taking place because instead of dealing with the pandemic or a G20 meeting about the pandemic, Nitwit Nero was instead playing golf. And so Raymond Deskins was finally arraigned on a charge of misdemeanor assault for spewing all over those two protesters. Because apparently in Virginia, you can still go to magistrate court and just swear out a warrant all on your lonesome. Can't do that here anymore. Surprises me that you can still do it in Virginia. That makes a lot of problems. And then, it's not the same as spewing, of course, but I think this might be what Flavio was talking about Friday on the front porch. Amber Elliott, the health director of St. Francois County, Missouri. I'm sure there's a bad pronunciation. St. Francois or something. Who knows? She's hung it up and quit. She quit as the health director for that county when the maggots started harassing her for talking about how awful COVID-19 is and how contagious it is. They threatened her, they tormented her, and she quit. Mm-hmm. And no one in that maggot government spoke up for her. We're talking about threats here. There is something in the Missouri Criminal Code that would match up with this. I feel certain. No. We wouldn't want the Attorney General of Missouri, probably a maggot, or the Governor of Missouri, certainly a maggot, or the Junior Senator from Missouri, assuredly a maggot. We can't have them out there running around standing up for governmental officials. Because they're scared to death of the maggots. And so they get to just run around and spew and threaten and people who are simply trying to do their jobs and keep this thing from getting worse than it already is. And it's already horrible. Oh, and let me go back to the question of immunity that I mentioned a little bit ago. Brother Deacon Asa said, allow me to just point something out about the whole immunity from COVID-19 bullshit, Bob. How can these brain-dead maggots claim that it's just like the flu, yet proclaim you're immune once you get it and recover from it? When was the last time you heard anyone say, I've just gotten over my flu and I'm never getting it again? Exactly how dumb are these sumbitches? Well, they are dumb enough that it will eventually, in all too many cases, catch up with them. And that may seem a little bit surprising coming from me, but grief is horrible. Loss is horrible. Do you remember the young woman a couple of months ago from Arizona, I believe, who said, my daddy died because he trusted and believed Donald Trump? He may have been a maggot, but he was also her daddy, and she loved him. And Donald Trump killed him by relying on his credulity as surely as if he put a gun to his head. Oh, and even though the transition will now go forward, Nitwit Nero is still saying,
I want to thank Emily Murphy at GSA for her steadfast dedication and loyalty to our country. She has been harassed, threatened, and abused.
You know, unlike, say, the health director in St. Francois County, Missouri, who doesn't get a praise tweet for being harassed, threatened, and abused.
She's been harassed, threatened, and abused, and I do not want to see this happen to her, her family, or employees of GSA.
Employees of GSA? Oh, Jesus Christ. He doesn't even understand the GSA is a government organization.
Our case strongly continues. We will keep up the good fight, and I believe we will prevail. Nevertheless, in the best interest of our country, I am recommending that Emily and her team do what needs to be done with regard to initial protocols and have told my team to do the same.
He knows it's up, it's over. But he can't just say best wishes. And then, well, there's the maggot court, I mean the Supreme Court. And even they today refused to take action and overturn a lower court decision that let late-arriving mail-in ballots be counted in Pennsylvania. This is an outgrowth of the 4-4 decision last October before we got Justice Handmade, where they said that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling that ballots postmarked by Election Day can arrive up to 3 days after the election was over. And then the maggot court said, this was Sammy Bad Breath shoot the black kid in the back of the head at 30 feet, even though he's running away and doesn't have a gun, Alito. Alito said, nah, you got to segregate those ballots before you can count them. Because, well, anybody surprised that a maggot Supreme Court justice would be in favor of segregating something? Because I'm not. So today, they published their regular order list, and there was no action on the case. And so there won't be any action prior to Biden being certified as the winner of the election. Oh, for God's sakes. Megan sharing this with us. Bob, have you seen this bullshit? Headline, gun-toting congresswoman-elect may carry Glock at Capitol. Dateline Washington, the Associated Press. a firearm-toting congresswoman-elect who owns a gun-themed restaurant in Rifle, Colorado, has already asked Capitol Police about carrying her weapon on Capitol grounds, her office has acknowledged. If she does so, she apparently won't be alone. I didn't know this, but the practice is allowed for lawmakers with some limitations. Under decades-old congressional regulations, the public is barred from carrying weapons in the Capitol, its grounds and office buildings, but Republican Lauren Boebert, aged 33, was elected this month from a conservative Western Colorado district after gaining notice as a brash pro-gun activist who straps a Glock pistol to her hip. In an upset last June, she defeated five-term Representative Scott Tipton for the GOP nomination, in part by claiming he wasn't an ardent enough backer of President Donald Trump. She will not, however, give an interview over her desire to pack heat in the Capitol. Her spokescreep, Laura Carno, said last week in an email, "This was a private discussion and inquiry about what the rules are, and as a result, the congresswoman-elect won't be going on the record." So we're going to have at least one gun-toting maggot parading around the halls of the House office buildings and maybe even the House. I don't know. Does that mean that she can carry it right into the well of the House? Does that mean Democrats can, too? Does that mean there's going to be call-outs? Wah, wah, wah. Yeah. So, curiously, the Democrats did ask how many members pack heat in the Capitol. And according to Capitol Police, there's no standing requirement for a member of the House or the Senate to let anybody know when they're packing. Now, regulations require safe storage of weapons, but that responsibility resides with the member. And this goes all the way back to 1967. I know, Ralph says, what the, guns in the Capitol? A 1967 regulation says no federal or District of Columbia laws restricting firearms shall prohibit any member of Congress from maintaining firearms within the confines of his office, or from transporting within Capitol grounds firearms unloaded and securely wrapped. Ah, there's our answer. They can't bring it into the House chamber. Well, that'll be challenged. "That's a violation of my Second Amendment rights," she said. "Imagine being a member of Congress and having to give up my sacred Second Amendment right to go into the very halls of Congress, the very well of the House that is the seat of governmental power, and I can't take a gun?" Oh, yeah. This is going to... And now Marjorie Taylor Greene can maybe pack heat along with Lauren Boebert. Jesus. Oh, the morons, the morons, the morons. So many of them, you know. Wouldn't be Moran Monday if we didn't have some morons in Talibama. They've been gathering there for a while in Albertville, Alabama. That's Albertville, pronounced Albertville. Because the Marshall County Courthouse in Albertville, like ever too many Southern and Alabama courthouse lawns, had them a Confederate monument and a flag. Well, last week, I can scarcely believe the words appearing in front of my eyes. Last week, that monument and flag were removed. This, in turn, has caused the maggots to go out of their tiny little minds. And so they've been protesting at the monument, talking about how their history's being erased and all that bilious horse shit. WHNT TV News 19 brought the story of a young woman by the name of Jessica Lynn Fry, age 38. She started shrieking and howling at someone else at the protest, a counter-protester, I presume. And she threatened to hurt them. And the next thing you know, some real live Alabama cops were putting some real live bracelets on her wrist. Really? I got a little audio here even. Oh, they're standing there, the maggots, they're so proud. They're wearing their blue jeans and their camo jackets, and they're carrying their Confederate flags, heritage, not hate.
It's over here. Nobody threatened over here. We don't threaten over here.
Oh, you started crying real quick, huh? You started crying real quick.
Yeah. 38-year-old Jessica Lynn Fry was the one you heard. Police said Fry and another person at the protest got into an argument, and she threatened the other person with bodily harm. You heard the one woman on the video saying, "No, nobody's threatening anybody over here. We don't do that." Further detail, though, was pro-Trump Confederates showed up, and this woman started threatening violence against peaceful protesters who were minors. Oops. Oh, they're just having such a hard time of it. They are. Hey, thank you, Brian. Brian has finished off the last of fundraising and gotten us started on tomorrow. So that means tomorrow is just 280. So thank you, Brian. Thank you very, very kindly. That's huge. I ran across, as we move into the third hour of the program, that's a 2-hour filibobster by now. I should remind you, not that any reminding is needed, but this is a conversation radio program. If you'd like to, if you've got something you'd like to say, you're more than welcome to bring it to the community and discuss it. Bring up the issue, talk about it. We'll rant, rave, carry on. Who knows? If you want to do that, find me on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, or 304-574-8178 gets you through, as does the stress line. I had a lot of fun the other night. I got tweeted a YouTube link to Mr. Stress, and I turned around and retweeted it. The Mr. Stress Blues Band playing at a place in Cleveland that they referred to as the Sick Brick. The Sick Brick. It was called the Brick Cottage. And it's a set they recorded there in January of 1979, just a couple of weeks before I would have turned 16. And I had a blast listening to it. But anyway, that's why we call it the Stress Line. It's named for Bill Mr. Stress Miller. And somebody's on it right now. Let's stand not upon the order of our going, but go at once. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. It's Rudy from Arizona.
Well, hey, Rudy. Haven't heard from you in a while, my friend. How are you?
Well, going through a little cancer radiation kind of thing, so I've been kind of out of it, but it looks like I got a shot, so I'm going to run with it. But I got a question, first of all. Who is the guy that introduces your show? Cussing and discussing, that guy that does the intro?
Yeah.
I love it. I mean, he's great. Who is he?
That's our dear friend, my dear buddy, John Fox, up over down under in Australia.
Outstanding. Good. So he's an American living in Australia.
Yeah, he's an expat. I don't know if his Australian citizenship has come through yet or not. He was working on it though.
Yeah, I just love it. I mean, I love that cussing and discussing. Every time I talk to somebody about your show and try to get them on, I always say that cussing and discussing. Anyway, I love you, Bob. It doesn't mean nothing, but it means something because I found out that it really pisses off the maggots. When you write the word, or when you say the word Trump, leave the R out. Becomes Trump.
That gets them hot under their little maggot collars?
Oh, it pisses them off. I mean, it really does. I mean, it takes the power out of the word, kind of, you know? Trump, it sounds like, when you say Trump, it just, he's a loser. Last time I talked to you, I think I talked about how the 3%ers, the oath keepers, we got everything in this county where I live, and we've got the Klan, believe it or not, in Arizona, about how they're always talking about their guns and how they want this civil war and blah blah blah.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I told you that I went and I bought my own AR-15 just because I didn't know. You can't believe how openly violent they talk nowadays. I mean, they talk about it on radio. They talk about it in supermarket. I actually tried to go down to the police station and ask if they knew about it. And it was obvious I got a couple, three sentences into my question and realized, fuck, this cop is...
Oh, wait, he's one of them.
Side. Yeah. It was weird, Bob. I just basically backed out and said thanks and left. But it's not over. These people, these are all, and I love it. Everybody's off of Fox onto what's it called, Newsmax, and OAN. These are complete. Every time I get on talk radio with them, it's their show. They've got the dumb button. I get into talking about something that they don't like me talking about. Click, I'm gone. It just pisses me the fuck off. I mean, why can't we have an adult conversation about this current affairs where, when the vote happened, it was in this county, it's 75% went to Trump, 25% went to Democrats. So I'm out number 3-1.
Well, I'm not surprised, but overall, of course, Arizona went the right direction. But knowing the medium for what it is, Rudy, I can well imagine that the local right wing broadcasting is probably even loopier than anything anybody hears on a national level.
Oh yes, by magnitude, yeah, it's way worse because they know that they have this county. Just before the election, he stopped right here in Bullhead City. He flew into our little stupid town and had, 20,000 maggots show up. And they talked about it when the radio host came back and talked about going to that rally. Bob, it was like listening to a bunch of 16-year-olds talking about the Beatles or something. They were just pushing and get. They were just so... They're coming in their pants, Bob. It was pathetic.
Well, there went dinner in the Mountain Standard Time Zone, Rudy, and they got you to thank for it.
Okay. It's worse than anything national, yeah. And
Well, they know they can get away with it because the media outlet is probably aligned with them, and nobody's worrying about the FCC doing anything to their license. Sure.
Right. Right.
But I got to ask. I mean, I know you've been fighting your own battle for a while. What are you doing to stay safe? Because these are some serious disease spreading vermin out there.
I'm okay being by myself. You know, I mean, this is my wife's. This is the home that my wife made for us, and I'm quite comfortable here, and I don't mind being by myself. And you know, it's been a while since my wife died. I need to find a girlfriend, you know? I need to find somebody to share my life with. Actually, Bob, I love being in love. I love it.
Sure.
I've always had good relationships, and I've never, you know, I don't hate women. I've never had, you know, it's always been friendly, and I miss it. I mean, you get someone in your life that you can trust and love, and they're your everything. That's where it's at. I mean, that's, you know, and can't find a girlfriend or anybody, you know, with this COVID thing.
Well, I mean, I don't mean to disparage the entire state of Arizona, but perhaps just the county where you are. Given the way that you've just described it, Rudy, my guess is you're hunting for roses in an onion patch, my friend.
No, come on. There's. I'm an old fart. You know, I mean, I'm pushing 80. I'm not 70 anymore. I'm pushing 80. So, you know, I'm looking for an older lady. There's a lot of Democrats out here. There is, but you know, and I've got to find a Democrat. I mean, I how are these people that live where a husband's a Republican and the wife's a Democrat? How can that work? I can't.
That's a mixed marriage, Rudy, and those things never work.
I couldn't do it. You couldn't do it. I mean, I need her to be my partner. You know, we got to be on the same fucking.
Yeah, not your political sparring partner.
No. And I did have four women in my phone, and then my phone died, and can't recover the phone numbers. And I was stupid. I didn't, you know, take the time to write down all the contact and all the numbers on the phone. You know, just in case somebody died. You know, you don't think your phone's ever going to die? Well, it does.
True enough. And at the worst possible time.
Bob, I lost connections that I had for 30 years. I lost my all kinds of relatives, and it was stupid. And I thought about it, you know, a couple months before. Hey, maybe I ought to write down all those numbers. I didn't do it. But I love you, Bob. You've had some very interesting shows in the last 6 months.
2020 has been a hot mess all the way through. That's all there is to it. And you know the thing is, 2020 doesn't end until January 20th, 2021.
Yeah, this guy, this Trump has got this Tump. Remember Tump? Tump,
yes.
Donald Trump. Trump takes the power out of it. What a weasel fuck. This guy, you know, everyone says that he's just going to burn it down on his way out. I mean, you saw the Rudy Giuliani thing. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
This was embarrassing. And I guess that woman lawyer, that Sydney or whatever, they fired her. She was too wacky for Giuliani. Jesus.
Well, they pinned it on her. He was plenty wacky in his own right, but he's the $20,000 a day guy, and she's just, you know, she was there to play the chump for Trump.
She's QAnon. She's I heard someone say that Michael Flynn was Q. So maybe, huh? I don't know. Okay, I'm going to let someone else talk. Bob, thank you for everything. And I think the last time I talked to you, I said how I stayed away from Mike Malloy because he got pretty dark, and you told me that, well, you know, this is what it is, and it's good that he's talking like this because he's right, and you were right about that. I need my Malloy. And thank you so much for running the 2 hours, the day before. And it just, I love Malloy. Malloy is my kind of fighter. I mean, you know.
Suffice to say that I'm absolutely convinced. Well, for a long time I've called him the godfather of progressive talk in this country, period.
I love it. I would die fighting with this. I mean, it's worth dying in this fight to save this country, because damn it, they're trying to ruin it. The way I always call them, this is a fascist. We're becoming a fascist state. Well, he's nailed it, and he's right. I love him, and I thank you for having him on your show, and I just love him, and I love you. And I found your address on Saturday, street or whatever, and you're getting something in the mail, because I still haven't fixed my goddamn email, but you're getting something in the mail, Bob.
All right. Well, thank you very kindly, Rudy.
Because we need you, motherfucker. Don't you dare this fucking guy. We need you. You know that.
I can't tell you how hard I'm trying not to. I really am.
Okay, my friend. I love you. Talk to you later.
All right. You take care, Rudy.
Community. Later.
Don't be such a stranger. That's our buddy Rudy out in Arizona. And Rudy is, what's the Latin phrase? Sui generis. One of a kind. So now I guess the ball is kind of beginning to roll a little bit. Questions are being asked now. And for instance, according to ABC News, the Miami field office of the Secret Service is looking at how to physically make Mar-a-Lago safer. But since he hasn't conceded yet, it's all just, unofficial. Right. But remember, he changed his domicile to Florida, thinking that maybe Florida didn't have an extradition treaty with New York. When ABC News called, they said, for operational security reasons, the Secret Service does not discuss specifically or in general terms the means, methods, or resources we utilize to carry out our protective mission. Well, I got this much to say. When he's not president of the United States anymore, I don't think we should damned well be paying room rent at the cheesy-ass hotel. But there are renovations taking place to the living quarters where COVID, Caligula, and melanoma are expected to live. I bet you it's got more than one bedroom. Yeah. Oh, and Melanoma had a big day. They had the, I guess, official welcoming of the White House Christmas tree. Yeah. The delivery of the Christmas tree is a thing. So there's a photograph of Melanoma with three people wearing a mask, and Melanoma isn't, because, she's already had the Rona, and so she's immune. I think we talked about that earlier in the program. They welcomed the Christmas tree, how does she return? When it's the final Christmas for Melanoma and Donnie, it's not just the White House Christmas tree, it's the fucking White House Christmas tree, because remember, and who gives a shit about the fucking Christmas, huh? That's what I want to know, Melanoma once was heard to inquire.
Who cares about this fucking Christmas? Fuck those fucking children.
Yeah. Oh, but Rudy mentioned, and I had previously mentioned, Sidney Powell. Sidney Powell is still, I guess she's trying to get back into Nitwit Nero's good graces, or maybe she thinks that that Rudy Giuliani's going to go to his reward and somebody's going to have to collect that $20,000 a day. She's trying to be a good little maggot and act like it doesn't hurt her that she's been ditched by Donnie. Instead, she babbled something inane all about how the evidence I'm compiling is overwhelming that this software tool, don't call anything a tool, ma'am, was used to shift millions of votes from President Trump and other Republican candidates to Biden and other Democrat candidates. We are proceeding to prepare our lawsuit and plan to file it this week. It'll be epic. We will not allow this great republic to be stolen by communists from without and within, our votes altered or manipulated by foreign actors in Hong Kong, Iran, Venezuela, or Serbia, for example, who have neither regard for human life nor the people who are the engine of this exceptional country. You know, Sid, given that you're representing a guy who deliberately downplayed a pandemic that's killed 250,000 Americans, I wouldn't be saying anything about lacking regard for human life. We, the people, elected Donald Trump and other Republican candidates to restore the vision of America as a place of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, all that stuff that they were writing back when this country was still plagued with slavery. So, yeah, okay. What a Lulu. I guess she's not going back to her car wreck practice. What was said earlier, it's true. She really is a QAnon goonie. Because her Twitter profile picture is a reference to the storm, otherwise, which is the term used to describe Democrats being rounded up and slaughtered by QAnon. Yes. And sooner or later, well, there's no sooner or later about it, but the Secretary of State of Pennsylvania is transgender. Her name is Dr. Rachel Levine. And she's done a passing fair job. She's trying to keep her fellow Keystone Staters from dying of the Rona. But if you're a maggot like Rick Wiles, it doesn't matter. Oh, no. Because of course not. How sickening is it to refer to a human being as it? Well, that's what Rick Wiles has done. Yeah.
That's a man
in a dress.
In a dress.
Not a dress, probably.
No, that's Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani is a man in a dress. If you're there, Matt, thank you. You can see that this that stuck in my brain forever. That's that picture of Rudy and Donald when Rudy's that ain't drag. That's a man in a dress. Rachel Levine is not a man in a dress.
You're mentally ill.
That is slander. Allegations of criminal conduct or mental illness are slander per se. I'll bet even in Pennsylvania. And just because she's in a government position does not mean she's necessarily a public figure. She's not seeking the public limelight. She is fulfilling her duties as the chief elections officer of the state. And that does, even a liberal reading of libel law doesn't mean that a person who does seek the limelight, like this Rick Wiles goon, gets to call her mentally ill, or any of the other things that he goes on to call her. She's a woman. Transgender women are women. Pass it on.
Dr. Levine, you're mentally ill, and no normal person should listen to you.
Normal? I want to know what constitutes normal in Rick Wiles's sick and twisted world. Because any civilized human being understands that normal is just a setting on a dryer, at best. Learned that a long time ago from our dear friend, now departed, Peter Godbold. But that, like Rudy Giuliani was not doing drag, Rudy Giuliani is a man in a dress, some of these things stick.
You need mental health counseling. You need deliverance.
Ding, 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 ding. Really? Really, Rick Wiles? You're looking at a trans woman who is the Secretary of State of Pennsylvania and saying to yourself, sure do got a pretty mouth. Really, Rick? Ding, 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 ding. Yeah?
To the people of Pennsylvania, you are absolutely insane if you let that transvestite freak.
She's not a transvestite. A transvestite is a man who gets satisfaction or pleasure or a sexual thrill out of wearing women's clothing. That is not who Dr. Rachel Levine is. And Dr. Rachel Levine, by virtue of having doctor in front of her name, is probably orders of magnitude more intelligent than Rick Wiles. Wait, there it is. It all makes sense now. I just realized. It's not so much about Dr. Levine being a trans woman. It's the Levine part. Because you might recall that Rick Wiles is a notorious, and I mean that in the dictionary sense of the word, a notorious anti-Semite. He's a Nazi. Or at least a Nazi sympathizer.
Rule your life. What he just told you he's going to do to you starting this week?
Dr. Rachel Levine is in no way, shape, form, or fashion a he. Misgendering a person as a sign of disrespect says a hell of a lot more and negatively about the person doing the misgendering than anything it says about the person being misgendered. It says that Rick Wiles is probably a lot more fascinated with who Dr. Rachel Levine is than he'd let on. But then again, we're talking about a goddamn weirdo from the white wing religion industry. He.
November 20th? You're going to obey that transvestite freak? Seriously? In the state of Pennsylvania?
Mr. Levin has laid out a caste system, a COVID caste system.
Mr. Levin, this is another idiot chiming in, thinking that somehow or another they're doing some brave and bold thing by misgendering her and calling her Mr. By God, even if she wasn't a trans woman, you rotten little sack of shit, it's Dr. Levine. And she busted her ass to get it, and you will never, ever, ever even get within a country mile of the kind of intelligence and the kind of work you have to do to earn the title doctor, you little religious goon.
What he snuck into that little operation, this attrition.
Chase that freak out of the state.
You got that? Chase that freak out of the state. This is a guy who just publicly threatened a state official of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Reckon has anybody filed a complaint on that? Now, this is a guy who has also declared the Antichrist will be Jewish.
Chase it out of the state.
Chase it out of the state. It. By the way, just in case you're wondering, and I know you're not, this is a follower of Jesus Christ. This is a Christian. And none of the other Christian sects and denominations in this country will tell you that he is not. Well, maybe some would. Most wouldn't. The Baptists won't say that he's not a Christian. The members of the Church of Christ won't say that he's not a Christian. The Church of God in Christ won't say that he's not a Christian. The Assemblies of God won't say that he's not a Christian. The Apostolics won't say that he's not a Christian. Hell, I wonder if the Roman Catholics would even say that this guy isn't a Christian. It. You know, when you use it, what you're saying is that you personally deny the essential humanity of a human being. For an it is a thing and not a person. Within the larger understanding of the way that the English language is structured. It.
Rise up in Pennsylvania and chase that freak out of the state. You don't have to tolerate this stuff.
Yeah. Rise, chase this thing. I told you, thing. Out of the state. Twice. In the space of about a minute and 5 seconds, he called for harm. Because the only way you get chased out of a state, and it's a commonwealth, not a state, you goddamn moron, Rick Wiles. The only way someone gets chased out of a state is if they are so threatened that they believe their life is in an imminent danger. So, by extension, he's called on white wingers in Pennsylvania or outside Pennsylvania. To threaten Dr. Rachel Levine to the point that she leaves her office and leaves the state. And why? Why? Because Wiles is outraged that Dr. Levine expanded the mask requirements to try to stop more people from dying of COVID-19. It's disgusting. But he's not alone. I ran across something. I ran across something this weekend that I found distressing and disgusting. Now, I've been a big fan, and this happened earlier in the year, like March or April, and I hadn't heard about it until another story took me to a place, and then I've always gotten a big kick out of the Squidbillies. I know, for instance, our buddy Steve from Georgistan is a big Squidbillies fan, too. And the heart and soul of Squidbillies is the early Kyler character. Ignorant, mean, but funny as hell, and voiced by a guy who's, well, naturally, it wasn't a prayer meeting story. Just because one of the, no, this is a story, about, the Rick Wiles story was a story about stochastic terrorism. Using the power of media to encourage harm, terroristic harm, against an individual. That's called stochastic terrorism. Well, back in the spring, Unknown Henson, who is the voice of early Kyler, got into it with somebody he ought not get into it with. Unknown Henson's name is Stuart Daniel Baker. Hell of a guitar player. And his voice work on Squidbillies was magnificent. But when he got into it with Dolly Parton, well, he found out real quick that he had tangled with the wrong beloved American icon. Because he decided that he was going to go after Dolly for being liberal. And he wasn't in character. He wasn't doing it as early Kyler or whatever. And so he went on to Facebook months ago. And I just, you know, I bring this up because it dovetails so perfectly with Rick Wiles there and what he was saying about Dr. Rachel Levine. Well, what it boiled down to, I'm sorry, not April, August of this year, Dolly Parton had expressed her support for Black Lives Matter. Because there was a cover story on Billboard about that very fact. And he went on, Stuart Baker, unknown Henson, went on his own Facebook page and wrote the following. So now this freak-titted old Southern bimbo is a BLM lover? Remember, slut, rednecks made you a millionaire. And it got so hot for Stuart Baker, unknown Henson, that he eventually canceled his own Facebook page, took down the offending post, but it was too late. Oh, yeah. So after he called Dolly Parton a freak-titted old Southern bimbo and a slut, he got canceled. The creators of Squidbillies, Jim Fortier and Dave Willis, said, "We're aware of the extremely offensive and derogatory social media posts made last week by Stuart D. Baker. The views he expressed do not reflect our own personal values of the show that we and many others have worked hard to produce over the past 15 years. For those reasons, production of Squidbillies will continue without Mr. Baker. Effective immediately." The pity is, a Rick Wiles doesn't have enough of a presence to get shut down over something like that. Now, Stuart Baker can go out and say what he wants to, but that was... And I'm trying to figure out why somebody with a gig like that would do something like that. Kind of just beats the daylights out of me. Did he actually think that the people tuning into Squidbillies were people who were like early Kyler? Did he think that it was being watched? Did he not understand that was comedy and that early Kyler was a mockery of Southern redneckery and right-wing conservatism? And the reason I connected the two was freak-titted bimbo on the one hand, versus transvestite freak, chase that freak out of the state. Jesus, these people. I don't know. Maybe Stuart Baker could get a gig on Rick Wiles' program. That'd be something. Yeah, he'd be a better sidekick than that other dude in the clip that I ran. Because he didn't just say that. He went on and he said, "Yeah, leave. Leave, liberals. Unfriend me, please. Because I don't want you un-Americans around. Have fun becoming an Eloy or something without a thought of your own where you bow down to the all-knowing minority. Have fun forsaking your own race, culture, and heritage. Have a nice time." All because Dolly Parton expressed support for Black Lives Matter. That's all. But the old Southern tradition of accusing a white person of betraying their race, always plays among some. I'm surprised they didn't, you know, I mean, they raised a couple of million dollars for Kyle Rittenhouse to be out walking the streets. Is there a GoFundMe for early Kyler or the voice of? Kind of surprised that there's not. Cancel culture, because that was the next thing. Poor old Stuart D. Baker, unknown, beloved unknown Henson, the voice of beloved early Kyler, has been subjected to cancel culture. Yeah, maybe he can start touring as unknown Henson, you know, in a Klan hood. Did he think, says James in Illinois? No. Don't impute thought with these maroons. Yeah, what a maroon. What an ignoramus. Yeah, Matt in San Francisco. I want to choke that guy's face. How dare he say that? Because that's another one of those little markers. I know what you mean, Matt. Ricky Schroeder, among other people, and Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy, helped put up the money to put a man who murdered two people and maimed another one back out on the street. Dolly Parton, on the other hand, has given $1 million to help advance vaccine research for COVID-19 and has set up a library that provides books to underprivileged kids the world around. Now you tell me who's got the morals. They don't quite have it locked down as tight as they think they do, that moral high ground. Yeah. Let's see. Reverend Guitars dropped their signature guitar model for Unknown Henson. He lost Squidbillies. Hearing about his remarks, Elizabeth Cook, who has had her music on Squidbillies, said, "I'm very sad about every bit of this." Yeah. And what did Dolly Parton say? All she said was, "And of course Black Lives Matter. Do we think our little white asses are the only ones that matter? No. Everybody matters." And hell, that's the kind of thing that gets you praised in some white wing circles. All lives matter. What got them red under the waistband, though, was the reference to our little white asses. Jesus, this country. Why did he do it? Lee in New York says, Harlan Ellison stated there's only one real reason you did that dumb thing. It seemed like a good idea at the time. And I genuinely think that he thought, Baker did, that it was going to work to his advantage. That Squidbillies and purchasers of Reverend Guitars, that, you know, with a signature model, cost a lot of money. He thought, that all that gravy was coming from right-wing rednecks. Yeah, oops.
No end to it.
And just to wrap things up, an interesting story about, since we've spent so much time talking about COVID this evening, apparently Kelly Loeffler, Attila the Hun, the woman who's married to the guy who runs the New York Stock Exchange. What does that say about the New York Stock Exchange? She's sidelined for campaigning here for a little bit because she apparently caught the Rona after hanging out with Mike Pencilneck Geek at an event. According to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, U.S. Senator Kelly Loeffler's campaign said Saturday she is self-isolating after she tested positive for the coronavirus and later received an inconclusive result. Yeah. Oh, well. To borrow from John Bridevo, says Darlene in Connecticut, are you shitting me calling Dolly Parton a slut? She's a national treasure. Dolly admitted without shame and in a matter of fact way during an interview that she won't walk 10 feet from her trailer to the makeup studio without being in full makeup. She puts makeup on to go get made up. My guess is that asshole who called her a slut is projecting. My favorite line from Dolly's is, it costs a lot of money to look this cheap. Self-effacing, brilliant, yeah. But what I was getting at is that chess master Garry Kasparov has been on the Twitter for a while, and he put up a thread recently that was pretty interesting. He said, while most concerns about the U.S. becoming like Putin's Russia focused on an authoritarian president, and by the way, Putin has said he's not ready to acknowledge Joe Biden as being the U.S. president-elect. Well, fuck you, Putin. While most concerns about the U.S. becoming like Putin's Russia focused on an authoritarian president, I'm starting to worry about an enfeebled Congress with extremist wings like Russia's, nationalists, and communists. Such extremes could push people toward a relatively reasonable-sounding authoritarian. Putin had the nationalist ranting of Zhirinovsky and the communist Zhuganov to make him look like the only sane choice. As I wrote years ago about this radicalization trend, the Spanish Civil War model, this isolates the middle, but that presumes an eventual victory by one side. Instead, it can leave an opening for an opportunistic agnostic like Putin, who cares only for power. Extremism isn't the only danger. Dysfunction and stagnation are too. If Congress increasingly is seen as abdicating its powers as the first branch, people will continue to support the expansion of executive power when their party has power. Putin cares more about the type of person who wins than their politics. And he supports extremists on all sides in his interference campaigns, not just for chaos, but to delegitimize the system and make an autocrat more likely to rise. Trump attacking the legitimacy of the election doesn't really end on January 20th. It's an attack on the legitimacy of Biden as president. Trump is never going to stop saying he was cheated, and his GOP enablers are destabilizing the country with their silence. Only 5 GOP senators have acknowledged reality by my count. Cruz is tweeting pictures about Thanksgiving when he and his colleagues are the real turkeys. Constitutionalists, rule of law, or Trump? They've chosen, and it won't be forgotten. Right now, it's high crimes and misdemeanors, but if Trump holds a rally on January 21st saying he's the real president, is that not treason? Aside from the violence it would likely lead to, it's an attack on the union itself. Well, sadly, Gary, it is not treason. Treason is very, very narrowly defined in the Constitution. But what makes all of this interesting is the latest ad from the Lincoln Project, because they're still doing ads. The election's over, but there's still problems to be solved.
It's now time to remove the word republic from the Republican Party. These hypocrites in office don't care about a republic. They don't care about our democracy or the Constitution they swore on a Bible to protect. No. In standing behind a president who has brought international shame to the Republican Party, we have seen their true colors. And they are treasonous, unpatriotic, downright despotic, but most importantly, dangerous. Because while Trump has shown himself to be feckless and pathetic and unmoored in the chaos he has attempted to sow, there are others waiting in the wings, waiting for their turn to dismantle our democracy. And they are not so vacuous and insecure and self-absorbed. From this presidential embarrassment, they see the full and total shift to authoritarianism. Those are Republicans? We think not. We are watching, and so is the world.
The Lincoln Project.
Yeah. Now, what you don't see, because, well, this is a radio program, there's no seeing, is that they talk about the senators who are waiting for their chance and the members of the House waiting for their chance to do the authoritarian mambo right. They show Josh Hawley, Kevin McCarthy, Mike Lee, Tom Cotton, Mitch McConnell, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, and of course, Lindsey Graham. And I've been pointing out for years that the real danger isn't Trump, as much damage as he's done. The real danger are the people coming after him. The new and different kinds of Republicans, like Ben Sasse of Nebraska, for instance. Yeah. Which in turn makes all the more interesting a revelation brought forward by Carl Bernstein, who says that, well, he named names. He said there are 21 Republican senators who, through the course of conversations with colleagues, staff members, lobbyists, White House aides, have repeatedly expressed extreme contempt for Trump and his fitness to be president of the United States. Rob Portman of Ohio, Lamar Alexander of Tennessee, that new and different kind of Republican, young Ben Sasse of Nebraska, Roy Blunt of Missouri, Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, John Cornholio of Texas, John Thune, Willard Romney, Mike Braun, Tim Scott, Rick Scott, Marco Rubio, Chuck Grassley, Richard Burr, Pat Toomey, Martha McSally, Moran, Richard Shelby of Alabama. And then Carl Bernstein said, with few exceptions, their craven public silence has helped enable Trump's most grievous conduct, including undermining and discrediting the U.S. electoral system. And in the case of some of those, the Venn diagram that overlaps with the between that list and the Lincoln Project ad, we see the future. Trumpism, maggotism, will be retooled and reworked to support a continuing fascist onslaught against this country. And so we end the program noting how brutally, desperately, dangerously, critically, absolutely important what happens in Georgia is. And I want to thank our buddy Paul from Parts Unknown for his challenge this evening. that since you met it, resulted in $150 going to support those two races in Georgia. Thank you, Paul, and thanks to everybody who responded. That's a brilliant stroke. And between now and January 5th, all of us all over the country who want to bury, who want to sink a wooden stake deep in the heart of these fascist impulses and bury it in a mound of garlic. Well, we got to do everything that we can do. Whatever we can do. So thank you, Paul from Parts Unknown, and everyone who responded. Thank you. Thank you for getting the ball rolling, Steve and Ms. Karen and little Cletus, in memory of little Twiggy. Thank you. And happy birthday, Andrew. Faith, please tell Andrew we said happy birthday if he's not there to hear it. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air, day after day, podcast after podcast, week after week, month after month, year after year, and we're into our second decade. Thank you. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatsoever manner you may choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Remember, Malloy's on the way at 9 p.m. at HeadOn.live. Best place to listen to Malloy for the first run. HeadOn.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Now, please stay safe. The numbers that Paul from Parts Unknown gave us this evening are chilling, made even more so by Steve in New York. Do everything in your power not to get this goddamn thing, please. Wear your masks. Make sure you've got sufficient masks. Wear your gloves. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use hand sanitizer. Carry it with you everywhere you go. Maybe even a little hip flask of internal sanitizer. That's a joke. Maintain your social distance because of the aerosols. Again, 10, 15. If they're wearing masks, 10 feet, 15 feet. If they're not wearing masks, don't get anywhere near them. Try not to be in the same building with them. Turn around and go somewhere else. And if somebody comes towards you saying that Donald Trump is going to stop the communist takeover from within and without, avoid that person like the plague. Because she is. Later, y'all.